This is commercial stakeholders group and the ICANN board. From our perspective, it's your meeting, and we're here to interact, but biased in favor of listening. Happy to answer questions, happy to engage in whatever the topics are. This format is the one that we've evolved in recent times and is aimed at substantive discussion and has worked out pretty well. So let's just dive right in. Robin, it's you're chairing?
If you would you, like.
Please. And there's a set of questions which we've agreed to. I confess that my mind is a little befuddled these at this hour. We've been shuttling from one meeting to another, but we'll try to cover it up pretty well and dive in. We seem to be unable to project the questions, which would be helpful, but you have them. So let me recommend, read them off, tell us what the workload is that's in front of us, and then stage managers through the process. Oh, and I get by with a little help from my friends here. Thank you, Bruce. How to protect? Well, go ahead.
Okay.
Cheers.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Crocker. Why don't we just sort of go back and forth, because we proposed two questions and the board proposed three questions or discussion topics, I should say. And so why don't we just kind of go back and forth between the different topics? We can start with the first question that the board proposed, which was what is the outcome of, or is there any resolution of any conflict between the constituencies, the different constituencies within the non-commercial stakeholder group? We've got the non-commercial users constituency and the not-for-profits operations constituency, and so the board's question was, what's the resolution of any conflict between these constituencies? So on this particular discussion topic, I wanted to turn the floor over to Alain Beringer, who's the acting vice president of NPOC, and he'll respond first on that point. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, I speak to you in an acting role. Our elections are underway right now as we speak, so really I'm not an elected legitimate spokesperson, but I guess a consensus spokesperson for a short period anyway. What I find most interesting with the question is not necessarily the answer, but the way the question was framed by the board. It carries some elements of view to that. And so I would say, what conflict? There was a real conflict all the way to Dakar. And if you can imagine yourself in a stakeholders group room, well, you know, NCUC is the elephant and NPOC is the mouse. So we had a real conflict until Dakar, and since then, actually, there's been a shift of leadership, and the conflict has actually, after we talked about it, become more of a perceived conflict, because we realize we have many, many objectives that we share. So we met 2 days ago, and it was it was a tough meeting, but it was all done on a positive tone. We kind of flushed out the irritants and came up with a joint statement, which I will not read here, but it's available. And that statement says that we're going to work together towards our common objectives. That doesn't mean there won't be disagreement. But we are going to work together. So I think the word conflict between the two constituencies can be erased.
Thank you very much for that. Did anyone have anything they wanted to add to that, or shall we move on to the other issues? Okay, great. Let's take the first issue that was proposed as a discussion topic by the NCSG, and it's really sort of a high-level, big-picture theoretical, if you will, kind of discussion, but it's really important to the non-commercial stakeholder group. And this is, how do we protect ICANN's multi-stakeholder bottom-up policy development process? And there's sort of a lot of sub-questions or sub-issues that are all part of this overall discussion. How do we know what is really policy and what is implementation of policy? Who makes those decisions? How do we better protect the appropriate balance among the various competing stakeholders for influence in policy development? And then how do we ensure that proper ICANN process is followed to develop policy? And one of the impetus for this question was some concern about recent requests that circumvent the bottom-up policy development process and rather would groups or some groups would prefer to engage in bilateral discussions with the board or with the GAC to get policies that they want at ICANN as opposed to participating in the bottom-up multi-stakeholder policy development process. So how do we protect that? How do we discourage these kinds of bilateral negotiations and really try to make sure that policies come through proper channels, include all of the stakeholders, go through the full range of the policy development process, not shortcutting comment periods or other kinds of mechanisms that are built into the policy development process that are intended to ensure fairness and are intended to ensure the multiple views are heard and that the different stakeholders within the overall framework retain the right balance amongst the structure of how ICANN policy is made. So again, this is really sort of a big picture question, but it's very important to our side to have this kind of a discussion about protecting the bottom-up multi-stakeholder policy development process. So does anyone have anything they want to add on this?
I think Thomas, I see. And
Yeah, thanks. I guess I'll just jump in a little bit and say that, I think it's pretty clear what the difference is. I mean, if I agree with the decision, it's implementation, and if I don't, it's policy. but you know, more to the point, I think is there. This is one of those the cases where there is never really a clear line because it really gets to whether it impacts people and whether they're comfortable they've been consulted with or not. And depending on where you sit, something can look like policy to where, and from somebody else's perspective, it can look like just implementation and the details don't matter a whole lot. And so what I would maybe suggest is, you know, this is a topic we've been going around and around on for a long time. And it may be that the best thing to do is, or one possible approach would be to actually put together a short issues paper, sort of review what is, listed as policy, what is not, with some definitions, and try to get some agreement on what it is and what the principles are. Because, we keep talking about it kind of at a high level and past each other, and what we really need to do is find agreement and some principles about, well, if something is policy, we won't try to shove it under implementation and not do the right consultation.
Thank you. Ray and then Bruce.
And Milton.
Oh, sorry, Milton. Was he after Ray and before Bruce? Got it.
Thank you, Steve. Going along with what Thomas said, in the end, two things have to occur. One is there has to be some feeling by everyone that all voices were heard. And at some point, you probably need to be able to somehow or other demonstrate that they have. The other part of it is, and more importantly, is that everyone that participates in the process has to feel that the process is fair. Because in the end, if everyone feels the process is fair and that they've been heard, and but for some reason or other, their viewpoint doesn't prevail, they have to feel comfortable enough that they will allow the thing to go forward and that they will like to participate in the consensus and in the working of the welfare of the group. One of the things that's possible to happen is that when a proposal is put forward, is as Thomas was referring to in issues paper, is for the person that's proposing the policy to actually explain what the policy means, what the consequences of the policy could be, things that would further the understanding. And at this stage, when that occurs, then to encourage everyone to participate at that early level, then is when you can make the most meaningful changes to things to, and accommodations, that more so than changes, to make sure that everyone feels the policy is workable. The other advantage of doing this is that, you know, what the implications of the policy are. It causes you to look at things such as resource requirements that are going to occur when you implement the policy. It also causes you to look at risks that may occur as a result of this policy. So there's a number of things that could be done there. And so in the end, there's some legwork that has to be done in the early stages, I think, that would help push that through. And if some or other of these kind of sentiments could be worked into the policy development process as a whole, the document says, here's how we're going to do business, I think that might help as well.
Milton, please.
Yeah, I think the comments we've heard have been somewhat helpful, but I think they don't really address my main concern, which is it's not so much that we don't understand the proper conceptual or principled distinction between policy and implementation. It's that there are political pressures on the board which create a very heavy pressure on you to redo things, and then you call it implementation whether it is or not. I think that's our concern. So in the specific case, for example, of the ANA, and all the pressure that was brought to bear in Washington on regarding the new TLD program, you know, we have it just seems like it never ends. And for people who participate in good faith in the process and then feel like the rug is being pulled out from under them, the feeling is that people who don't play by those rules get rewarded, and people who do are essentially kind of disadvantaged because they, you know, they just have to fight this endless fight and constantly be in reaction mode. And so I think it's more a question of, does the board understand that this is a problem? And I understand that this is a unique circumstance. Until the IANA contract is renewed, things are unstable, and you're under a lot of strange pressures. But I just want to hear that you understand it's a political problem fundamentally, and that you have to stand up for your own processes, and when, particularly when they end. You know, it's just...
So the nature of this conversation is there's a sort of a statement, a premise included in all of this, as if it's true, but we don't have any real facts included in this dialogue here. And so, you know, if one just read the transcript and would say there is a sort of unresponded to assertion that the processes have been thwarted, that the special interests do come and get access through bilateral negotiations. And that may be what you believe, but it's not necessarily what the rest of us believe, and there's no facts on the table here. This isn't the right place to get into an extended conversation of all that, but I want to go back to Robin's introduction that this is a bit abstract, and without some observables, some facts on that we can dig into and agree on what it is we're talking about, it's a little hard to respond, because it would include a tacit agreement that all of the assertions that you're making are in fact true. Bruce, and then Bertrand.
So I think, firstly, Milton, you're saying, do we recognise it's a problem? The answer to that is yes, we do. And there's certainly been a concern that the board has sort of evolved in the last 18 months from being a board to a policy council, and it's trying to revert back to being a board. And the second aspect of that is that the board actually agreed with the recommendation from the ATRT review team that one of those recommendations was actually to provide more guidance on the separation between sort of policy and implementation and when to use a PDP. So we as a board have actually agreed that it's a problem and agreed that we are looking to address it. That particular topic has been delegated by the board to the Board Governance Committee, and it's one of those we had. It's early days, I guess, but ultimately the aim would be to put out, as a couple of people probably requested, but a bit of a paper. I think Thomas requested that, but essentially a paper to say this is our current thinking, and get the community comment on that. Just to give a couple of high-level observations, I guess, there's a difference between a policy that applies to ICANN and a policy that applies to multiple stakeholders in the community. An example of a policy that the board might approve that applies to ICANN could be that, you know, we post minutes of the meetings by a certain number of days, or that we post the agenda for an ICANN meeting within a certain time frame. That's a policy that really just applies to the organisation, and the implementation of that could evolve over time as just exactly how notice is given, and we could update that implementation every month if we wanted to. The other type of policy is where it affects stakeholders, and a good example of that would be transfers. And transfers affects registrants that are registrants of domain names, so they're obviously impacted, and affects registrars that have to manage that process, and it affects registries that have to manage that process. But there's also a very strong compliance angle there associated with transfers, because a lot of the work has been done with response to consumer complaints, more or less. So in that environment, the implementation is that the policy's got a lot of implementation in it, and a lot of what I see coming from the GNSO is quite fine-grained implementation. You know, it's even down to the form of the email that the registrar has to send, or down to the mechanisms that are used to lock and unlock names. The reason it's in so much detail is that if you don't have that detail, there's no way you'd be able to manage compliance. And so that's where something that has gone to the GNSO has had a lot of work on implementation, whereas something like posting minutes of a meeting, you know, has had far less detail. So first, I just want to separate the detail is different depending on the context. And secondly, when multiple stakeholders are affected, I think the principle is that the board will act when there's a consensus of those affected stakeholders. And then your next question then is, so what process is used to determine that consensus? And we have a few different mechanisms at ICANN. One of them is a two-thirds vote of the GNSO Council, and that's a mechanism that is in the registrar agreement as respect to approving a new form of that agreement. It needs to go to the GNSO for a two-thirds vote. It doesn't say it has to use the GNSO's PDP, but it says it needs a two-thirds vote. Other times, measures of consensus for consensus policies are much more confined. You know, we have PDPs and things like that. So it is a complex topic. I think the best way is for us to actually produce a paper on it, and then get community feedback on it.
Thank you, Steve. Baton Le Chapelle. To go a little bit further on Milton's question, I think there are a few elements. One is the amplitude of the policy we're talking about. And for instance, when we're talking about consensus policy within the registry that will apply to the registries of registrars, it's a little bit different from the process that we have done with the new GTLD program, which is a very, very large scope. When the processes are addressing very large policies, there actually is not such a clear distinction between policy and implementation. There can be policy guidelines and then implementation policy elements. A lot of what we discussed, indeed, in the applicant guidebook had a strong policy dimension. It was not the overall policy. It was how the different elements of the overall policy provided by the GNSO were going to be put in place. And this is only with hindsight. We didn't know that much of the distinction, but it probably would have been beneficial to have a period that would be intermediary, that would have identified a few key building blocks that needed to be refined, that would still have been policy of sort. Because the problem is when it goes to implementation, or if we consider in the case of the new GTLD program that it went directly to implementation and that the applicant guidebook was implementation, by definition it doesn't go anymore through the validation by the GNSO or the different stages for the overall document. I mean, in the end, the overall last iteration of the applicant guidebook has never been validated formally by the GNSO in a particular way. It ended up being iterated, and then the board said, now we have reached a certain level. Which brings a very important question. How do we document successive closures? Because we need to have, as a community, a certain number of situations where it is possible to say, now we decide whether this topic is closed or not. And the big challenge is related in that respect to what Bruce was mentioning, because some of the clauses or whatever is being discussed can potentially apply only to the people who are discussing it in the room or in that process. And some of the discussions can apply actually or have consequences and impact on a very broad range of people. And even if we had something to document whether there is rough consensus at one stage and closure, because we cannot bring a better consensus, because we're not a membership organization and there is no way to say that the people from one constituency are actually representing everybody from the same type, you always have the risk of people who have not been involved in the process who come back afterwards and say, well, by the way, I was not involved. And so ICANN is in a weird situation where we naturally say, well, you know, you had people that are representing, quote-unquote, this subpart. It can be the business constituency, it can be the IP constituency. But these people are not elected or designated by all the constituencies or all the members of that category outside. And so, because they have no mandate, it is difficult for them to commit to a closure beyond their own commitment. So, with insight and with the goal of avoiding the kind of problem that Milton was mentioning, one of the challenges for ICANN in the future is to address objectively the question of how to make sure that within the constituency we don't have only the actors who are willing to come, but also to engage and invite and outreach and bring in the actors that must be in explicitly, and to take the INA or INTA, they should have been more explicitly dragged in to validate their commitment to whatever stage of the process, I guess.
One just sort of academic flaw that comes to mind as I listen to you is that makes it possible for some actors who should be in to refuse to come in so that they can reserve the right later to say they weren't in.
This is the very big challenge, yeah. And it's an element of free riding in any multi-stakeholder process.
Mary?
Thanks, Steve. And some of the points I was going to make have already been said, so let me just return somewhat to Milton's and your comments earlier. I hope the board heard the initial part, which is that I think everyone in the community, and for us, our group, understands the pressures the board is under, particularly at this time, and all the requests and lobbying that go on, and we know that's very, very difficult. At the same time, I think that one of the issues we've been talking about a lot in this environment is volunteer fatigue. And we all know that this little echo chamber in ICANN, things build upon themselves, whether real or not. And in some ways, maybe perception unaddressed could become reality and then affect the issue of people's belief in the system and their willingness to work. I think if you were to ask members of the community, not just this group gathered here, for some examples, I mean, one of the things is, we can't know all the facts. We obviously will not know who's talking to whom and who's asking the board for what specifically. But in terms of the perception, I think some examples would obviously be the RAA issues, for example, the request from the IOC and the Red Cross that some belief should have gone through the GNSO, who could at least then say maybe that's not policy, it's an implementation detail. And I think the final example, which Milton alluded to, would be defensive registrations. A public comment period was opened, I think, a few days after a letter was received from the NTIA in the midst of the application period seeking information. And that may well be just information. It's got nothing to do with the first round or anything. But that does create questions, given that the trademark issues were fairly thoroughly canvassed in the process leading up to the launch. And then on Sunday, in the meeting with the GNSO Council, there was a question from the board that asked about defensive registrations at the second level. And so if you look at all the developments and the public comments, as well as this latest development, there is a real fear, I believe, in the community that on the trademark issue, as my final example, that there is going to be pressure to reopen the second level protections that were developed over time through community consensus, when there already is in the guidebook a built-in guarantee of a review at some point in time. And I don't know that the board can or wants to address these things, but I thought one purpose of this might be feedback to the board. I do believe these are very real fears in the community.
Thank you very much. So you listed three specific things, just to recap. The last one took up enough time. I'm trying to remember to go back to the first one. The RAA, and then the IOC, the Olympic Committee, and the Red Cross, and then the third one was defensive registrations. Probably the best thing to do is ask Avery what she give her the turn. Then maybe we could take each of these if it's appropriate. It's a little bit of time management as well, so I'll leave it to you, Rob. I know what I would say with respect to one of them, and I would pass the ball to others for the other two.
Okay, thank you. This is Avery. Without getting into any of the specific issues and I'm getting quick feedback. And without necessarily prejudicing or the question of did one move from policy to implementation or implement without policy, one thing I noticed in the application guidebook, the board was generally superb at always being able to root any of its implementation issues in some element of the policy that had been created until we got to one where a new category of reserved names was created in the application guidebook that had never been through policy process. So basically, without asking that to be discussed in its detail, what I'd like to ask is that be a case study for this paper that's being discussed, because I definitely believe from my interpretation of that event at this point, that definitely crossed the border of creating policy, a new type of reserve name, and assigning to people to reserve that new type when reserve names had well been established and solidified. And so I believe that one crossed the line, but without getting into the discussion, did it, didn't it, I'm asking that if that be a case study for this paper. Thanks.
And just to be sure that we're all on the same page, we're talking about the Olympic Committee and the Red Cross?
Yes. Okay. They were assigned to that new category of reserve name.
I understand. I just want to make sure that there was no room for misunderstanding what we were talking about. I think it's your job, Robin, to decide sort of how to drive this and so forth. Okay. We're happy to respond, but I don't want to just dive deeply in and at the risk of...
Why don't we do that? Why don't we just, if we could real briefly, go over those three issues, and then we could maybe close this issue and move on to the next...
All right. Well, the one I'm comfortable saying something about is the RAA. The current quite intense negotiations that were kicked off after Dakar came after an extended period of time, measured in years, of things going around and up and down and around again, and creating a great deal of frustration, but not closure. A useful event to mark the time, but not necessarily the only one, is that the GAC took us to task on behalf of the law enforcement community in a very forceful and public way. by itself, you know, out of context, I don't want to say that the GAC can do that and that's the thing that drives us. That's just as another way of falling into the trap of special interest in a way. But it coincided with a clear understanding, independent of that particular interaction, that that's a process that had been going on for far too long, and so there was a degree of dysfunctionality, and there needed to be a change in mode of operation. That's my comment about the RAA. Anybody want to respond to the other two, to the marks and to the boy, I'm having trouble at the moment. What was the last one?
The Red Cross Olympic Committee request.
In terms of study?
Either of those?
Well, on the IOC Red Cross, I think there's other people here more of an expert than me. Obviously, there's some proposals and some discussions out there, and I think some language that's been posted. But, Kurt, you can help me if you've got more details on that. On defensive registrations, there was a public comment period, and there has been a number of submissions received, but the board has thus far not chosen to take any action. So there's no action on the staff side. I think it's going to be, obviously, it's an important issue that's been considered deeply for 6 years already. And obviously, in a multi-stakeholder community, which is loosely coupled and highly decentralized, the parties that have a strong interest in it will continue to seek venues to raise that issue. But no specific forecast here, except to say that at this time, there is no change to the applicant guidebook, and we're running the program per the applicant guidebook to close the program on April the 12th. Thank you.
So is there anyone who wanted to address the issue of the Red Cross Olympic Committee requests?
I don't know if we have the right people here.
No one's jumping to the mic, are they?
Do this one. Okay, so, yeah, again, the concern was this was a circumvention of the policy development process, and how did we get there? But if there isn't anyone who can answer that question, we could move on to the next question.
Well, if I may, I think Avery Dory actually did a pretty good job of summarizing the reality of the situation and suggesting that it be a case study in questions of when things are developed based out of policy and when perhaps they might not be, which I think seems like a very interesting characterization of the issue.
Okay, so if there were no other comments on that, let's move to the next question that was proposed, or discussion topic that was proposed by the board, which is NCSG's views on the RAA. And I actually wanted to ask our GNSO counselor, Wendy Seltzer, who's been very active on this issue, to be our primary respondent on that.
Thank you, Robin and Steve. I think the procedural issues here have been amply discussed in the previous questions, so I'll move right into some of our substantive concerns with what's happening in the registrar accreditation agreement, or what might be happening and what's being demanded by law enforcement. The progress report that was recently posted, we have particular concerns with a few of the elements in the negotiations and the law enforcement requests around privacy and proxy accreditation and around who is validation. So our concerns are with the ways that these would impact individual and non-commercial registrants and users of the DNS, and that they might have particular impact on those trying to preserve privacy while using DNS and while registering domain names and speaking online, which in a way comes back to some of the procedural questions, because I'm not asking the board to help us solve these problems as board. I appreciated the board's resolution in Dakar sending some of these issues to GNSO Council for policy development process, telling us, Council, you have to figure these things out as a council where all of the stakeholder groups are represented, rather than having it thrown into a bilateral negotiation and rather than telling law enforcement and registrars to work it out amongst themselves. These issues need to be discussed among all of the stakeholders. And so we are reaching out to registrars and reaching out to law enforcement to ask how might we help them to solve the real problems that they're identifying, problems distinct from how can we get accurate data into who is, because that's not, at the end of the day, what anyone is actually trying to do. They're trying to figure out how can we keep the internet safe for users, for speakers, for those engaged in e-commerce, for those engaged in free expression and association, and if we can work on those underlying problems in true multi-stakeholder fashion, I think that we can move this forward. If we get stuck going through multiple translation layers, where law enforcement goes to GAC, goes to board, goes to staff, finally gets translated as a list of 12 specific requests where boxes need to be checked in order to say we've had a successful negotiation, I think that's unlikely to resolve any of the problems. And even if that gets negotiated, we'll be back again with another set of 12 requests. Okay, now we really need to resolve the problems of cybercrime, and here's a different set of demands to do that. But if instead we can all who share interests in keeping the internet open and safe and usable can be involved in that discussion, I still hope have hopes that and high hopes that we can reach better solutions.
We have a kind of hybrid operation with the contract that is subjected to a bilateral negotiation between ICANN staff and the registrars, or ICANN staff and the registries. There's two contracts for each. And that does create a funny situation in which you have some things that are subjected to this open multi-stakeholder bottoms-up process with all the complexities and opportunities that we put into it. And then on the other hand, we have this sort of business arrangement that is in there. And that creates some interesting boundaries as to what things belong on which side and how to merge those together. That's probably worthy of a discussion about what those issues are as a general principle, since we like abstract discussions here. Every time there's a boundary, there's some things that get tested right at the boundaries.
Just a question, Wendy. You mentioned that the board did send a request to the GNSO, and I heard a little bit of discussion about that in one of the GNSO council meetings. But what's the view of your stakeholder group on whether there are items that you should proceed with the PDP, or whether you feel that you need to wait for the work on the RIA to complete?
It's a good, a challenging question because of the synchronization problems. Do we try to do something, and where in this process will it fit? As the non-commercial stakeholder group, one of the items that we're engaged in work on is working on the freedom of expression impact analysis or human rights framework for analyzing these issues as they come up. And we're trying to produce something that we can use as a tool to evaluate proposals, whether they come out of PDP or from the bilateral negotiations. And that's where I think we are focusing most directly.
I think an observation I'd have, which use the term contract negotiations versus the term PDP. I think the fundamental problem is, for historical reasons, the who is policy today is basically embedded in a contract, whereas the intent of the GNSO policy development process is to create policies, and once they are approved, then the contracting parties have to abide by them. So I think that's one of the challenges, and one of the things is I think the WHOIS review team had a similar observation that when they tried to find the WHOIS policy, they couldn't find it anywhere except the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. Maybe structurally that's an improvement that could be made, is to pull it out of the agreement and call it a WHOIS policy and then manage that policy through a policy development process.
Thanks. I'll just respond to say that meshes with one of the comments that we are making to in the WHOIS policy review team, and that we may bring up in council that the WHOIS policy should be unified, or if WHOIS policy is going to be unified, it should be through a PDP at the GNSO council.
Was there anyone else who wanted to speak to this issue? Okay, seeing no one, let's move on to the second issue and final issue that NCSG proposed, which is the how to internationalize ICANN, how to increase participation of developing country actors, not only the composition and outlook of the board and the staff, but the whole perspective and framework that it operates under. And for this particular discussion topic, Bill Drake, another one of NCSG's GNSO counselors, would like to be the designated respondent. Bill?
And by would like to, she means she asked me to do this 10 minutes ago. I was actually, when we were kind of discussing ideas on the listserv, trying to decide what we wanted to talk with the board about, this general set of questions came up, and as you can see, the questions are rather crowdsourced. And I actually suggested that maybe it wouldn't be productive to discuss it because we've tried several times before, and I had the impression that the board didn't find it particularly engaging. But a lot of members really did want us to talk about it, and now that I understand NPOC is going to be moving more in a development kind of direction, which is, I think, a big shared area of interest between NCUC and NPOC. I think the whole question of strategic engagement with developing countries and how we internationalize and how we sort of the optics and how ICANN is perceived in a geopolitical environment all are still very much live issues that merit some discussion. I guess one way of getting at this to make it more concrete, because I know that's preferred, I was just looking at the website for the Global Relations Committee of the Board, and which is actually, it's nice to see that there's some material on the website now. I'm not a big fan of the new website, but that's another point. There are minutes from some of the discussions, and I noticed, for example, that in October 22, the committee discussed the need to use the right nomenclature when discussing this topic, as it's not really internationalization. The committee wants to talk about the definition of overarching principles and messages and the need to engage with the community on these definitional and prioritization efforts. And I thought, well, fantastic. Here's a chance to engage with the community. This is what we've been asking for. I also note that the September 11 meeting last year, there were discussed a couple of discussion papers considered. So, obviously, there are things percolating that the community has not really been engaged with the board on. And so I wonder if perhaps we could ask the members of that committee and others who want to talk about it, how are you thinking about internationalization conceptually, if the term internationalization is not the right term? What is the right term, and why is it the right term? What are the top priorities in your view, given what's going on geopolitically in the ITU and elsewhere? And how can we in the community provide inputs and find out what's going on in this space? So, I welcome anybody who wants to provide.
Judith and then Bertrand.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up. I'm the first female Asian on the board. And the view of Asia in particular to the generic, to the new GTLD program, particularly in IDNs, is extremely positive, but not embraced in the same manner by probably another sovereign state, which brings to the table the delicate balance of how do we approach internationalization. So the board, I'm new to the board, and honestly, most sincerely, we're stymied. It's a stymie because we say this is a bottom-up model. And so we are waiting for the bottom to push up, what are your views on internationalization? How should we proceed? But then the stakeholders are asking us, how do you plan to proceed? So is this bottom up or is this top down? Even we are confused when you ask us how we are to proceed. So I'm glad this is on the table right now.
It's bottoms up. It's only a question of who's on the bottom.
NCUC knows who's on the bottom. Although, actually, I was amazed to find out that we're an elephant today.
Bertrand.
Thank you. Actually, the question, as you did said, it's less what we actually have as a strategy or an orientation at this moment that is the valid exchange. It's what are the different dimensions of the term and what we take that into account so that the discussion can go on. The discussion is going on indeed in the Global Relationship Committee. But there are several dimensions to this word, which is a little tricky because it has the word national and it seems to refer to a system or an approach that is based exclusively on the nation state. There's always this tension between global, international, internationalization, meaning are we going into an intergovernmental type of thing? That's not the point. And the term internationalization in this respect has been ambiguous for all of us. So if we try to deconstruct a little bit, there are several dimensions and I may be missing some. One thing is, for instance, and there's no particular order, the composition of the board, which is a very important element, and for instance, whether the NOMCOM and the different structures are contributing to the sufficient geographical diversity. That's one element. It's the type of recruitment of personnel. But beyond the type of recruitment of the personnel is a key question of offices. Are there offices in what? Regions, countries? And this is directly connected with the functions of those offices. Because there are several type of interactions. There are interactions with governments in those regions. There are interactions with other actors in the community. There are some actions that ICANN is doing in terms of information or training where it's an outreach type of function. So who do you locate
in those offices. And to be frank, the question of the location of offices is itself a multidimensional issue, because choosing where you put one can trigger a war of competition between different countries who want to have an office. It depends on what is the size. So the question of the local offices is one key question. An element, for instance, that I always bring into this debate is that, of course, there's the geography, but there's also the type of scripts. And we will go more and more into a domain name system that has different IDNs, and taking into account that there will be actors who will be using the same type of script, they may have a need for certain types of service. So the question of localization and offices is one thing that is important. And as you know, there is also the question of how do you articulate the structure of currently developing regional vice presidents with the aspect of following international processes who themselves are not geographically based. If you take everything that is happening in the UN environment, in the WSIS and on the rest, you have a tension between the geographic location and people who are following processes that are completely different from what happens at the local level. And finally, we should not forget and put in a side and a corner of our heads that during the discussions in the President's Strategy Committee in the past, an important dimension of this internationalization is related also to the legal status of the organization and its potential evolution. So it's too long to discuss, but at least from the top of my head, what? Yeah. So from the top of my head, that are the subcategories that are clearly being discussed. What I would like to learn from you is how you would like to organize this interaction regular basis.
Let me intercede for just a second, because it's past 4:30, and the board is due in another meeting very shortly. But I do want to relatively quickly, chime in, and then I want to do a quick summary, and then I want to bring it to a close. Go ahead.
I agree with the previous speaker. I don't think a 501c3 has stopped other organizations from becoming truly international. GKP Foundation, which I'm on a trustee, is a Spanish foundation based in the Asturias, but we work globally. The only contribution I can make is to say that as NPOC, we really plan to increase the membership from developing and emerging economies. And, you know, that's a difficult outreach artwork. You know, you have to do it one member at a time. And also be a little bit ready to empower institutions and communities from these economies. So if a Somali individual or institution wants to become a member of NPOC, we have different difficult rules for them becoming member. So we may have to think about membership criteria and internationalization. But it starts at the base, because the more international members we have from emerging and developing countries, the bottom-up process will bring up the issues and will change the mindset. But it's a long process.
Thank you. Bill Graham, who's usually quiet, wants to speak up here briefly.
Yeah, I just want to say the Global Relations Committee will be launching a questionnaire on this very soon, and it's kind of got two aspects. One is to help with the definition and determining the priorities in the field of internationalization. The second aspect is to try and find out how ICANN is doing so far. Thanks.
I wanted to just do a quick recap. Many of the key points have been made. It's a process in which we're feeling our way. There's inputs from all quarters. I won't try to say what direction is up or down. And ALAC, we've had the AFRALO summit in Africa, followed by the LACRALO summit here, both major and important efforts at bringing communities together in different regions. We have the appointment of vice presidents in different regions. We have the survey, which is an important activity going on. We're spending a lot of time in the board asking essentially the same questions that are being asked here. What is it we're trying to accomplish, how best to do it, and even spending time on which word is the right word to use, although I'd much prefer to get at what impact and what effect are we trying to have. So with that, Rod, you wanted to close up here?
Sure. Very quickly, I just want to thank all of you for not only the extremely articulate comments, and I really appreciate Wendy's comments about the importance of the user perspective in the RAA negotiations. That is so important, and that's just such an important view that you bring to the table as a constituency, and it's just invaluable for the organization. And thank you for the articulate advocacy. I love watching Avery take an issue again and put it on the table so clearly. But what I just want to thank you for is also the professionalism of this group and the great value you bring to the organization as a balancer, and also to all the organization. And so just a lot of appreciation. Thank you.
Thank you.